Our scripture reading, I just want to turn to Proverbs. And it's chapter 1. And we're reading verses 8 through to 19. Just give everybody a moment to find it. Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors or possessors. We ask that you bless the reading of your word this morning as we prepare our hearts.
On the screen, you're going to see a picture of an Italian immigrant to the United States. His name is Charles Ponzi, and his name has become the name of a very common form of fraud, Ponzi schemes. And in 1920, Charles Ponzi, through his scheme, it is reported or to be estimated that in 1920, he defrauded people of about $15 million. Through his scheme. What is a Ponzi scheme? Mary Darby explains very simply this in her article. The rules are simple. Money taken from today's investors is used to pay off debts to yesterday's investors. Typically, these investors are lured by promises of exorbitant profits, 50, even 100%. Often they are coached to recruit more investors to enrich themselves later. The problem is there is no actual investment going on. The only activity is the shuffling of money from new investors to old ones. Everything is fine until the scheme runs out of new investors and the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. According to an article dated November 2nd of this month on the website Ponzi Tracker, which keeps track of the latest Ponzi schemes and things like that, the latest person to be convicted in the United States of a Ponzi scheme is a man named Arthur Adams of the state of Mississippi. Arthur Adams developed his own or created his own Madison Timber Products Company. And he invited people to invest in his company with more or less a more modest gain or rate of return, 12 to 15%. And this investment would come as they harvested the timber from third-party lands that were owned by others. However, in court, the evidence showed these things. First of all, it showed that Arthur Adams didn't have any right to harvest timber. Secondly, it showed that he had forged timber cutting deeds, forged cutting agreements, and price sheets of timber values. And they also showed in court that he was using new investor money for other things, i.e. enriching himself, as well as paying off the first investors. Your typical, simple Ponzi scheme. Now, we all need money. We have to have money to buy food, to build a house, and to heat our houses. So money is necessary. We must have it. The choice before us is, how shall we acquire that money? Shall we acquire our possessions honestly through moral means of hard work and honest work and legal investments? Or will we fall prey to the lure of others for get-quick-rich schemes and the schemes that are immoral and take and exploit other people? This is the choice that is before the young man, as the father and the mother speak to the young man here in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 through 19. This is the choice that is before the young man as he's leaving the parental nest, as he's going out into the world to make his way. How shall he make his money? How shall he gain his possessions? As stated in earlier messages on the book of Proverbs that we're just taking a few, looking at it on a few Sundays, the book of Proverbs is seven collections of wisdom sayings written by different people. And these collections have come together in the format and are used in the format of parental instruction, communal wisdom, and sayings of the wise that tutors and parents use to educate and teach their children, and to teach their youth, and to teach the next generation. Because the next generation is leaving the home. They're going out into the big world, wide world to make their way. And these collections of the wise are used kind of like a textbook to teach their youth and the next generation how to survive, how to make their way in a godly manner and in a way that will help them become a godly, upstanding citizen of the country. And these collections are also used not just to teach the young or the youth or the uneducated, but they're also to be poured over by the wise. The wise will learn more and become wiser still. And so in this very first address by the father and the mother, his teaching is included here also, it addresses they address the son and they tell him to reject both the invitation to join with others to make easy money and to reject trying to gain or acquire possessions and money through immoral means, to reject the greed that motivates that. Now, the specific example that the father picks, the specific temptation that the father picks and discusses with his son and warns his son about is the call of the gang, where the gang comes, or not the gang comes, he meets the gang out in the world, meets members, and they invite him to join them. And in order to do this, the father uses a particular strategy. He uses a specific method. Rather than letting the son encounter the deceptive words of the gang on his own out in the world as he's making his way, the father tells the son what he's going to hear. So in these verses, you see that the father quotes the words. He quotes the arguments. He quotes the reasoning. He quotes the rationale that he's going to hear from the gang members as they invite him, come with us. He says, son, this is what they will say to you. And as he quotes what the message of the gang will be, what their invitation is, the father is able to expose the faulty reasoning. He's able to expose the lies that the son's going to hear. So in this way, he is able to help the son understand and recognize what the gang wants. The father uses the same method later in the book of Proverbs also, in another discussion, in another talk with his son on the adulteress in chapter 7, verses 10 to 27. The adulteress speaks very smooth words, and the father quotes the adulteress to his son. And in presenting and exposing the very words, the very speech, the very invitations that the son is going to hear, the father doesn't just forewarn his son, but he actually is forearming his son. You see, he's equipping his son to recognize the lies, recognize the content of the fools and the sinners that are going to be spoken to him. He is going to be able then, as the son is going to, already having heard what they're going to say, already hears and knows about their arguments, he can recognize it quickly. And therefore he can reject it, and he can counter the lies that he will hear. And this is very helpful for us, because this type of simulation training is something that, and this method is something that we should also use. As we seek to disciple new Christians, as we seek to disciple our own youth and our own children, as we seek to disciple and equip you as a congregation to be God's witnesses, we also should use the method of simulation training, where we present to you the arguments, the rationale, the words that you're going to hear from many, many different voices in society, so that you are able to recognize them, understand them, know why they're wrong, and then be able to counter them and stand up against the temptation. As you go out onto the street, you will hear many voices. You will be taught in the schools many different voices. You go on the internet, you hear many different voices. At work, you may be commanded by many different voices. We need to present those and refute them with Scripture. You'll hear voices of secularism, voices of consumerism, voices of LGBTQ lifestyles, moral relativism, voices of religious pluralism, voices from the drug culture, voices from other religions, voices spewing false gospels. You may have wondered recently in our last series on the Bible that we just finished up a little while ago, where we looked at what the Bible is, how it got to us, and what it is, and what that means for us. In one of the messages on the formation of the New Testament canon, how did the 27 books of the New Testament come together, and how were they written and collected together? You may have wondered, why did I spend time talking to you about the Gnostic Gospels? Why did I bring that up? Why did I bring up the lost Gospels? These Gospels of the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Judas, and Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of the Egyptians, these things. Why did I bring that up? I was using this method of teaching, this method that the Father uses for His Son, because you are going to encounter that as you try to witness to your friends and your neighbors. People now do not accept as legitimate the original four legitimate Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They say, no, there's these other Gospels that have been found, and they're the real Gospels. They have the real story of Jesus Christ. You need to be prepared how to answer that and recognize that these other Gospels are not Gospels at all, so that you will not be deceived, but you will be equipped to overcome the false claims and give a strong witness, as has been said this morning, so that your light may shine. You're forewarned and forearmed. So this is the father's approach and how he teaches his son. This is his method. Let's go to the gang's invitation as he quotes and speaks about the invitation of the gang. It's rather straightforward. It's found in verses 11 to 14. I draw your attention just to three things. First of all, there's the promise of quick and easy money, verse 13, along with the acceptance and belonging in a community, verse 14. This is what the gang is promising. We'll get you money easily, and you can be part of our community. The second thing to note from their invitation is how they fulfill those two promises. They fulfill the promises through dishonest and immoral means. They fulfill them through violent means, verses 11 and 12. And then the third thing to note about their invitation is the irony that you find in their invitation between their promise and how they are fulfilling the promise. You see, to enrich themselves and build their own community, the gang must impoverish other people. In order to enrich themselves, they must make other people poor, rob them, deprive them of their goods and their money. And in order to build their own community, they must destroy and be at war with the larger community around them. That's the irony. They promise easy money, they promise belonging in community, but that lifestyle of the gang is paid for and acquired by ruining the lives of innocent victims while being at war with the larger community. So the lifestyle and the community of the gang is self-centered and counterfeit. Father goes on in verses 15 and 19 to expose the gang, to expose where does this kind of philosophy, where does this lifestyle get you? In the end, my son, if you accept their invitation and you join their ways, where will it take you? And he exposes their destiny, which simultaneously is a reason for his son to refuse to join the gang or walk in their way. Verse 16 has two phrases. It says, their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. This teaches and shows that those who are in the gang are firmly committed to this type of lifestyle. They're firmly committed to violence. They're firmly committed to destruction of others. However, in their urgency to shed blood, they're blind. They're blind to the fact that they're on a suicidal path, that the path that they have chosen is going to kill them, and that they themselves are actually setting the trap for their own lives. Yes, the path of the gang promises and does temporarily provide riches and community. However, that lifestyle of violence and crime is eventually going to turn around and pay those who are living that lifestyle a wage of death. It's going to turn around and pay them a wage of death. If not in this life, in the next life when they stand before God and give an account for their life. While the men set traps of ambush for innocent victims and live off the profits of such immoral gain, they are blind to the fact that they're actually entrapping and building a trap that will destroy themselves to their own destruction. Verse 18 notes, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set ambush for their own lives. In chapter 10, verse 12, the proverb says, treasures gained by wickedness do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. Earlier, I referred to Arthur Adams, the man who had a Ponzi scheme in his fake company, Madison Timber Properties in Mississippi. He is, or was at this year, at the age of 58, being convicted. He will serve 19 and a half years in federal U.S. prison without any chance of parole till at least 85% of his sentence has been served. So at age 58 this year, he's entering prison. He will be, at minimum, if he's even eligible for parole at that time after 85% of his sentence, he will be 74 and a half when he gets out. If he's not eligible for parole and his parole's turned down, he'll be older yet before he gets out. Not quite the retirement plan that I think he was thinking he was building for himself. Instead, he built a trap for himself. As he sought to defraud others and enrich himself, he brought down to ruin his own life and his own retirement. Now, at this point, in our context, you might be thinking, especially of us here, we live in small town Mount Forest. We don't live in the big city. Really isn't too much gang action. There's drug action around here, yes, but really gang action. Which of us would be tempted to go join the gang? Which of us would be tempted to join some form or type of mafia? Probably none of us here this morning are really tempted to go out and join a street gang or to join the mafia. Yes, if we were in a larger city that had gangs, discussion and application of this text will take a very different course. But we cannot write off the gang talk as irrelevant to our lives. You see, the Father has one more statement. That's verse 19. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. You see, the violent method of the gang as they go around and do armed robbery and, if necessary, murder others to acquire their goods and to build their community, all that violence really is just a symptom. There's something causing that violence, causing that kind of violent behavior. And the root thing, the Father says, is it's greed. Greed. And greed, as we know, has many different paths, many different expressions. People can acquire their possessions and their wealth based on their greed in many other immoral ways and illegitimate ways that are not violent, that don't involve armed robbery or murder. In verse 19, the Father applies the consequence of blind self-entrapment to death as a general principle to everyone, not just the gang members, but to everyone who is greedy to gain in unjust ways, no matter how they gain this, material possessions or enrichment. It's easy for every one of us. We all have the legitimate need or desire for money and possessions. We all have those legitimate needs. But they can be corrupted and twisted and broken by our own greed, where our desires for possessions and money become uncontrollable and uncontrolled, so that we then begin to employ methods of acquiring our possessions and acquiring our money that are not legitimate, that are immoral, that are dishonest, that are hurtful to others, that are dishonoring to God. The trap of greed can snare us unawares in many different places. The trap of greed can spring simply at the dinner table. Watch siblings over a piece of pie. Greed can come and be aroused through commercials, sales pitches, advertisements. Greed can raise its ugly head in our hearts as we observe the new car that our neighbor bought, or the new roof that they put on the house, or just other possessions. Somebody else got the latest phone. Greed raises its head. Greed raises its head even as we try to do things right, even involve yourself in proper investments. Greed can raise its head through gift exchanges. Oh, they got that, and look what I got. During the settling of inheritances, through overestimations and expectations of what we need to live on. Oh, I must absolutely have this to live. And I cannot be denied. I must have it. Last week, I referred to the story of Jesus that he gave in Luke 12, chapter 12, verses 16 to 21. We were speaking and looking at the concept in Proverbs of the fear of the Lord. And that story that Jesus gave about a rich farmer who was a fool, or a rich property manager, land manager, who had this tremendous harvest. And we were looking at, I used him as an example of someone who was not in awe, reverent and cautious and awe of God as the Holy King, living his life without reference to God. And you know the story that he had this tremendous harvest that God gave him that he didn't even have enough place to store all the harvest. So he says, I'm going to tear down my old buildings and build bigger ones. And then I'm going to put my feet up and my pipe in my mouth and I'm going to kick back and say, take life easy. I'm secure. And I'm just fine. And God said, you fool. Tonight you stand before me and you're completely unprepared to meet me. Well, did you know why Jesus told that story? I didn't read those verses last week. Why did Jesus tell that story?
Well, the verses, the reasoning why Jesus told that is in Luke 12, 13 to 16. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But he said to him, Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you? And he said to them, that is the whole crowd, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he told him a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. So greed and the false belief that our life is given meaning and our life is secured by what we own or what we possess or how much money we have is why Jesus told that story. Greed is in all of us. And so we have to ask ourselves, are we blindly setting a trap of death and destruction or ruin for our life? Because we are giving into our greed and trying to acquire many things, whether it's just from a piece of pie to an inheritance. There's one further lesson to learn from this text. It's regarding these garlands and chains or pendants mentioned in verse 9. So in contrast to the way of the gang that results in death and destruction, the godly teaching of wisdom, verse 9, states, it becomes for the son, or for any who are going to follow these instructions, like a graceful garland for the head and pendants or chains for the neck. Now, don't miss it. And a commentator pointed this out. He says, don't miss this. The chains and the garlands are not the result of the wisdom teaching and following it and living it. No, the wisdom teaching, look at verse 8 and verse 9 carefully. The wisdom teaching, the teaching of the Father that he's giving to the Son, is the garland and is the chain that goes around his neck. And the garlands and chains, they're symbols. They're symbols of life, symbols of protection, symbols of victory, symbols of status. They're symbols of guidance. So the teachings themselves, what these two verses are saying, what the Father is saying to the Son, is he's saying, look, if you take my commands, you take my teaching, and you actually obey them, they will be life for you. They will be victory for you. They will be protection for you. They will be guidance for you as you go out into the world, my son. Old Testament
scholar Bruce Waltke points out that the wisdom teaching portrayed here as adornments, they're being worn in very, very visible places, up on the head, around the neck. And as such, they protectively advertise to others, to those who would want to tempt us. They protectively advertise to us, advertise to those who would tempt us. So as we put these commands and these teachings and these wise sayings to practice in our life, they become an advertisement to others around us. And it would kind of turn some of those who would want to tempt us off from us and away from us. Just like a wedding ring, those who take joy and advertise and talk about their marriage and their wedding ring, it becomes a protection against the adulteress or the adulterer. Likewise with these commands, they're going to become this chain, this garland that tells people, hey, this is how I live. Don't approach me with your ungodly ways. I'm not going to fall for them. Now, when it says in verse 8, when he says to the son, hear, my son, your father's instruction, to hear or to listen doesn't merely mean to acknowledge information. So to hear what the father is saying, the son needs to do more than just be able to repeat back to his father what he said or be able to write them all down. The father, when he says, hear, my son, your father's instruction, it actually means to act on it. It means to obey. So put it into practice. And if he will, then those commands, those teachings, those wise sayings will be like a garland and like a pendant for his neck. They will be the protection, the guidance that he needs, the victory that he needs. A simple dynamic of this, again, is from Jesus himself, Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 to 27. Familiar words, many of you will know them. They're the conclusion of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Everyone, then, who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And when the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against that house and it fell. And great was the fall of it. So true hearing, wise hearing, wise listening is to act on the godly instruction, act on the wisdom of these found in these collections, as we know it, called the Book of Proverbs. And we act on this instruction, letting it govern and shape our life, the paths of our life, our lifestyle, our beliefs, our values, and our behavior. And as we hear that instruction, truly hear it by then living it, it turns out it will actually, in the end, it saves our life. In contrast to those who do not listen and go their own way, they end up having built a trap of destruction for themselves. May God strengthen you according to his gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ to bring about the obedience of your faith, producing a harvest of godliness. Amen. Please be seated.